So in this book, Meditation and Life, they had talked about the three bodies, the gross body, which is the visible body, and then the subtle body, the mind and intellect. And that's where meditation occurs, in the mind and intellect. Of course, the gross body has to sit in a particular posture and all that. But ultimately, it is the mind and intellect which have to be directed inward, and the vasanas or the selfish desires are the obstacles in meditation, and that is addressed throughout this book, how we can make our mind pure, and only with a pure mind can the meditation be fruitful. And so today has a very, very important chapter in this text, which talks about Om, the chapter number 17. Om sometimes is written OM or AUM. AUM is better because it kind of lengthens it. Om, it should be chanted instead of Om. And also the AUM has a lot of meaning, so that's why that's the one we are using today. So Om is a very sacred mantra. In fact, no mantra in Hinduism can start without Om in the beginning. Whether it's, the Gayatri mantra, Om Bhur Bhuvah Svaha, or even the mantras dedicated to certain gods like Om Namah Shivaya, Om Shri Krishna Sharanam Mama, or even in Buddhism, Om Mani Padmane Om. Even in Buddhism, even in Jainism, the various Indian faiths all worship the symbol Om. And why is Om important? And why is it sacred? Because it is said in the Upanishad and also in the Bible that God is not visible. We cannot see him, we cannot know him, we don't even know whether it's him or her. It is that entity, even though they call it Father in heaven, but it's neither male nor female. In Sanskrit, they call it Brahman, the total reality, which cannot be known, cannot be thought of, cannot be described, cannot be seen, heard, smelled, tasted, touched. So, how are we to know that? So, they say Om is the symbol that represents. That's why the Bible said the Word was with God and God was the Word in the New Testament. So, what it means is the word symbol Om brings us close to God, directs our mind towards God. So, Om is a lot of very powerful mantra, and chanting Om. So also when we chant Om, like when we chant in the beginning of the class or when we do in meditation, it should not be done mechanically, Om, just like that. No, Om is God. So I am chanting God's name. And God that is within, that is outside, that total substratum, consciousness. So that is represented by Om. So anytime we chant Om, we should think it is God's name. Just as when we say Jesus, or when we say Father in heaven, or when we say Guru Nanak, or when we say Shiva or Krishna, it is God's name we are chanting. So Om is God's name, and Om is the one that does not have a form. Om does not have a form, even though this symbol is the sound of Om, but actually does not have a form. But when I say Jesus, I think of a form, or when I say Shiva or Krishna or Guru Nanak, I think of those forms of the Lord, but Om has no form, so it represents the formless Brahman. So the form is what you see, the pictures here, Krishna, Mother Saraswati, Mother Goddess, but Om is the formless, because God is form and formless, both. So we start with the form. I love this particular form of Krishna or Jesus or Buddha or Saraswati or Shiva or Guru, and then from that you extend it to the totality. So that is very important. So God cannot be only limited that this form alone will take me, that form who is the one I love, but will take me to the formless. And so all forms of God are to be loved, are to be respected, God in any form. So that is the important. So that's why Om is a very sacred mantra. It has a lot of sacred energy when we chant it, because it is God's name. It is God Himself presenting to us as Om. Now, why is Om so important? So they say there are three kinds of mantras, and the mantra is generally given by a guru or by a teacher. That's how our tradition is. Or you can even you know, study it and pick up a mantra. Now, there are three kinds of mantra described. So as we know, there are three kinds of gunas. There is tamas, which is laziness, rajas, which is activity and passion, and sattva is purity and knowledge. Those of who come to the Gita class know there are three qualities: tamas, which is laziness, rajas, which is action or passion, and sattva is purity. So there are tamasic mantras. What are tamasic mantras? These are mantras that are chanted to harm somebody. And we have a lot of these so-called tantric people or these witch doctors who, when you want to cast a spell on somebody, they say, you know, I want to cast a spell on so-and-so because he or she has hurt me. And there are mantras that they chant. I don't know if they work or not, but there are mantras that are designed to harm somebody. And those, of course, should not be done. Then the second is the rajasic mantra, where you chant and do certain rituals and prayers. In Hinduism, we do different prayers, but they are not done to know God. They are done for a particular purpose, like I'm starting a factory, so may my factory be successful, may I make a lot of money, or, you know, may I get happiness, or may my son who is going to college do well, may he be successful. So those are my, or when I'm building a house, you know, may my house be well. So those are rajasic mantras, which are done for a specific purpose of worldly success. And that is okay too. You know, at least you are remembering God when your son is going to college or when you're starting a factory or building a house. That is good. But the highest mantras are mantras that are done for spiritual unfoldment, the sattvic mantras, where through chanting this mantra, I come to reach God within and know God within. So that is the highest. So that is why when we chant the name of God, ideally it should be done so that I may know God. Yes, if I'm having a problem, if my child is sick or I'm sick, you go to God and pray, that is good. But don't go to God and pray only when I'm sick or only when I need something or when my business is not doing well. Remember God at all times so that I may know God and reach God. So God should not be an ATM machine. Whenever I'm short of money, I go click, put my code and the money comes out. So God is like that. Okay, God, I'm having this problem. You help me. No, God should be with us at all times. Now, there are three symbols, A, U, and M in this mantra, Om. So A, so it's the way it's chanted is Om. Like that, and then there is silence. So A is the first syllable of the of any alphabet. In Hindi also is A, A, E, E. In English it is A, B, C, D. So A is the first letter in any language. If you look at it, in any language, A is the first letter. So A represents the waking state. The waking state, because in our state, the first state is the waking state, because all our activities occur in the waking state. Our meditation occurs in the waking state. Our study occurs in the waking state. Though, you know, in this class, sometimes, you know, people go into the dream or deep sleep, but I try at least with my jokes to keep them awake. So all activities happen in the waking state. So A represents the waking state. Now U represents the dream state. So when you're awake, before you wake up in the bed, you go to deep sleep. And while you are waking up in that twilight zone, you have the dream sleep state. So U represents dream state and M represents the deep sleep. So waking, dream and deep sleep. And so Om. So person from waking goes to the dream state, dream to the deep sleep. And then in the deep sleep, there is silence, if your sleep is truly deep. And so that's why the chanting of the mantra should be done like that. Om. And then pay attention to the silence. The silence in our spirituality is called the Turiya state. The Turiya state means the state of God realization. So the sound should lead to silence, and the silence is where the sound arises. Like before all of you came and before I started speaking, this room was silent. In that silence, this sound is arising, you know, where I'm speaking and you are listening. And then when we are done with the class, then we go into meditation. Then from sound arises in silence, merges back into the silence. So the silence is always there. On that silence, the sound is a disturbance to the silence. So similarly, in our mind, the silence is always there. And the silence is the state of God, realization, Brahman. But on that silence, the sound of Om arises. Om. And when the Om ends, it merges into silence. So Mandukya Upanishad is the one that talks about these three states. And silence represents the substratum or the base on which the sound arises, right? Sound arises in silence, merges back. So similarly, Brahman or God or the substratum of this universe is the support of this universe, and the world arises in him or her or that. The world arises in God, is sustained by God, and ultimately disappears into God. Like all of us, we took birth. Where did we come? We came from our mother's womb. But ultimately, we came from God. You know, from God, the soul, the subtle body enters the mother's womb. They say it around the 6th or 7th month is when the subtle body enters. And that's when the fetus is said to be viable. Before that, the fetus is not viable. So it's the subtle body enters the mother's womb in the 6th or 7th month. And from that time on, it is said to be a viable fetus. Am I right? Is that correct? Yeah. So the subtle body enters. And where does did I come from? I came from God. That's what they say. The child, where did he come? It's a gift from God. And so the God is the substratum on which the whole universe, even I exist. I came from God. I am existing in God. And when it's time for me to leave the world, I will merge back into God. So God or Brahman is the substratum, is the silence. It's also called the Turiya state. That's why the silence is what we focus on when we chant the mantra Om. But as I said, Om should not be chanted mechanically, but I'm chanting God's name. It's a very holy mantra. It's a very spiritual mantra. So it should be chanted with that feeling of the God. And what they say, it represents the manifest and the unmanifest. Like there is this manifest world, right? But then there is an unmanifest that we don't see. One is, of course, the world of objects, emotions and thoughts, body, mind and intellect. But then there are the vasanas, which are unmanifest. And then beyond vasanas is the divinity, which is not manifest to us. God is not manifest. But God can be seen as the trees, the plants, the humans, the birds, the fish, the chairs, everything that you see is an expression of God who is unmanifest. So chanting Om is the manifest world, the world that I can see. And then when I go into silence, it is the world that I cannot see, the unmanifest, the word of Brahman, the place of Brahman. And that's why Om is said to be the Shabda Brahman. That means the word manifestation of God. God that cannot be seen but can be experienced by chanting Om. Now, how is Om chanted? So they say that if you chant, you say A. A comes from the lips. U comes from the palate. And M comes from the throat and the chest. So, A, U, M. So, all the sounds, any sound in any language has these three components. The lips, the palate, and the throat, and then ultimately the chest. So, Om represents all sounds in the universe. Because any sound has to be chanted either by the lips, or by the palate, or by the throat. So, that's why Om, represents all the sounds in all the universe in any language. Whether you're speaking Spanish or French or German or Hindi or Gujarati or Punjabi, words can only be chanted by these three methods. Words can only be spoken by these three methods, not only chanting. But even what I'm talking now, and I'm using those three back and forth, of course, we don't distinguish, you know, we just keep speaking. But the linguists tell us that sound either comes from the lips, the palate, or the throat. And obviously, when we are speaking, we are not thinking, am I speaking with my lips? Am I speaking with my throat? Or am I speaking with my palate? But Om represents all three. Then in the Mundak Upanishad, see, there is Mandukya Upanishad, Mundak, there is a very, very beautiful simile. It's, I'll just chant in Sanskrit and then give the meaning. Pranavo dhanu sharohi atma brahma tat lakshya muchyate. So pranava means the bow. Pranava also means om. Pranava means om. And why they use pranava? Because it is the life breath of the whole universe. Because God is the life breath of the whole universe. So here pranava is another word for om. So now suppose there is an archer and he is using a bow and arrow. So he has a bow and he wants to shoot a target. See, there is a circular target. Say he's in an archery competition. So what does he do? He has a bow and he has a string which is tightly strung. If the string is too loose, it will flop. It won't do anything. And if it is too tight, where it, you know, is so tight, then he'll try to pull it. He can't pull it. He might break the bow. So the string has to be just right, neither too loose nor too tight. And then the arrow has to be placed on the bow. And then what the archer does, he pulls the string, which is perfectly tuned, not too tight, not too loose. But and then with his full attention, see, he cannot be, while he's shooting, he cannot be thinking, what must my wife be doing at this time? Or my teenage daughter, you know, who is she with? No, his attention is totally on the target and only on the central dot. He's not thinking about hitting the circles. He's not thinking, of course, in the beginning, you know, we hit it everywhere. But his idea is that it should go to the center because I'm in this competition. So with full attention, when his arrow is positioned on the bow, the string is correctly pulled, his mind is not wavering at that time. There is no agitation. There is no disturbance. His mind is quiet, peaceful, and focused. Then he pulls the arrow and he releases it. And what happens if the arrow has been properly aimed? It goes straight and it hits the target and embeds itself in it. It goes deep into the target and becomes one with the target. Then only, it is said, if the arrow just hits the target and falls off, they say that doesn't count. You know, you didn't put enough force. And so the arrow has to go into the target, then only the point is counted. Otherwise, if it hits it and falls away, this guy didn't do anything. So similarly, the Upanishad says that Om is the bow. And me, the individual, the perceiver, feeler, and thinker, the individual is the arrow. So the bow is Om, and I am the arrow, I the individual. And what is the target? Target is Brahman. Target is God. So I have to use Om to shoot my mind towards God, direct it towards God. Now, remember, the person has to not be agitated. So similarly, the mind, when I'm sitting in meditation and I'm chanting Om, should not be agitated. I should not be thinking of a thousand things and getting myself all upset and worried and all, no likes and dislikes. At that time, my focus is clear that I want to know God, I want to reach God. When I'm sitting for meditation, just as when that person is sitting with the arrow, his attention is totally on the target, right in the center, I have to hit. So similarly, when I sit for meditation, I use Om as the bow. My mind is still and it is not too loose, not too tight. If my mind is too tensed up, then I'll end up with a headache. You know, I cannot, when I'm meditating, then you end up, or it's okay, meditation, if I do it, it's fine. If I don't do it, it's fine. If not today, I'll do it tomorrow. Then again, you know, it's not. So I have to do it every day. Do it with attention, neither too loose nor too tight. Now the arrow becomes one with the target, right? When we shoot. So similarly, I, the individuality, have to become one with God. So chanting of the mantra, I should disappear in meditation. There should be no individual. God alone is, and that alone is the reality. So mind should be quiet, should not be agitated, and should be focused. And at the end of the meditation, the individual should disappear and become one. And that may happen on occasion in meditation, but for the great sages, they are all the time staying in that state of oneness with God. You and I may experience that at moment. Talking about agitation, this lady goes to the doctor and her blood pressure is very high. So doctor says, your blood pressure is, how come it is so high? She says, it's because of my family history. She says, family history? Your mother's family or your father's family? She says, no, my husband's family. He says, how can you get high blood pressure from your husband's family? He says, doc, you need to come meet them sometime. So when the mind that is agitated, that is disturbed, cannot meditate, just as a shooter, when his mind is disturbed, he cannot shoot the arrow. In the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Sri Krishna says, Om Ekaksharam Brahma Vyaharan Mam Anuswaran Yah Prayati Tyajan Deham Tato Yati Param Gatim. So God says, of course, Krishna is, we believe, is an incarnation of God, and he has given the message of the Gita to us. So he says, Om is a Akshar Brahman. It is the same thing. It is the word symbol of God. Just as God is in the Bible or in the Upanishads, God is said to be unmanifest, but the word Om expresses that. So he says, Om iti ek aksharam. It is one word that expresses God. And he says, when you chant it, remember me. So remember God when we chant it, and that's very, very important. Om, whenever it is chanted, it is a very divine mantra. It is very sacred. Should not be just chanted mechanically. Mam Anusmaran. And then he says, one who, while giving up the body at the time of death, remembers me, God says, reaches me and reaches the highest state. So the story is, or the message is, that God should be remembered at the time of death. But how can we remember God at the time of death? They say in the there is a Mukundmala text. He says, at the time of death, you know, I won't be able to breathe. The saliva will be choking me. I'll be lying in some ICU and I can't breathe. I can't talk. And I'll be semi-conscious. And how will I remember you, God, at that time? So they say, start remembering from now itself. If you make it a habit of constantly remembering God at all occasions, when you get up in the morning, remember God. When you go to bed at night, remember God. When you leave your house, remember God. Every opportunity, when you see a child smiling, beautiful child, remember God. When you see a new birth, you know, a baby coming, that is God appearing on earth. When you see a flower blooming, when you see a tree, when you see a sweet fruit. Nowadays in the summer, we get so many beautiful fruits, you know, figs and mangoes. When you bite into that, where did the sweetness come from? Came from God. When I'm doing anything that is good, it is God working through me rather than I did it. And so when you see anything beautiful, like an athlete, you know, doing very good job in the Olympics, or a poet or an author or a great scientist or a great discovery or astronomy or some, you know, all these Hubble telescopes and how they can show us what happened in the beginning. All these great scientists, you know, it mind boggles how they can know what happened, you know, 10 billion years ago when the Big Bang, they're able to see that. So that is God. Who else is there, that brilliance? You know, how they can exactly predict that 10 years from now, this particular planet, Mars, will be in this spot, and they release a plane today or a spaceship, and 10 years later, it exactly hits Mars or goes close to Mars or Saturn, you know, where the aircraft. It took 10 years, and how did they know that Saturn is going to be in exact that same spot to be able to direct that knowledge? And that is God. That is so when you see anything brilliant happening. So that's why Krishna says, one who remembers me at the time of death will reach me. So he says, how can I remember you at the time of death? Start remembering you from now itself. At the time of death, You may or may not, but if you have made the habit of remembering God, and so have a mantra, have a mantra. It can be just Om, it can be Om Namah Shivaya, it can be the name of the Father and the Son, but make a mantra. And they say you should chant it 100,000 times before the mantra will have an effect. So any mantra, it can be a Christian mantra or a Sikh mantra or a Hindu or a Buddhist, but the mantra should be chanted continuously 100,000 times when you chant, then the mantra has full. So start doing it, you know, as often as you can. When you wake up in the morning, don't get out of bed. You just chant Om. If your Om is your mantra, is the name of God, do it 11 times, 21 times before you go to bed, lie down and chant. So the more you remember God, the closer you come. And then the last is the sphota, which is described in the book, which is a difficult concept. From what I understand, I may be right or wrong, it is the implied meaning. What do we mean by implied meaning? Like if I say flower or I say rose. So what is the visible, obvious meaning? The rose, which is red, has a perfume, has thorns, is, you know, very pretty. That is, has a, you know, fragrance. So that is the obvious meaning. But then there is an implied meaning, how a rose represents, you know, love. Rose represents, you know, for closeness. If you're sorry, if you've done something wrong, you send roses, you're asking for forgiveness. So the implied meaning is what all is represented by the rose, the beauty and the love and the feeling of, you know, closeness that flowers bring. That's why the people give flowers. So similarly, Om is the visible meaning, but the implied meaning is God. Implied meaning is that substratum of the universe. So this in brief, of course, Om we can talk a lot more, but in brief, I tried to give a little broad picture of not only what is in the book, but what is in the other Upanishads and in the Bhagavad Gita, where Om is chanted. I hope this makes it clear why Om is so important and why we chant it. So any questions or comments? Yes. Yes.
They gave me the certain fentanyl, and I was more like in a dream state.
Right.
And then I was in deep sleep. And when I woke up, I don't remember any of it.
Right.
So I felt like if I die, then I don't know if I'm going to remember your name because I won't have any consciousness.
Right, right.
So how can I change that?
So by just chanting it all the time. So all the time. So what it becomes a constant flow, like a repetition in your mind. The more you chant it, after a while you wake up and automatically the mantra, like I chant Om Namah Shivaya, and a lot of times, not every time, but a lot of times I wake up chanting the Lord's mantra, or when I go to bed I lie down and relax my body and observe my breath and I chant Om Namah Shivaya, Om, slowly as I take each deep breath. And so when you take a deep breath in, and then you can chant, breathe out and you can chant Om, or whether it's Krishna mantra or whatever. So as you breathe out, just chant the mantra. And the more you do that throughout the day, whenever you, you know, when you are very busy, it's hard. But if you can, the more often. For me, the moon is a good reminder, because moon represents Lord Shiva. So every time I see the moon, I remember. So make these little, what do you call these, reminders, or put God's picture in your car, put it on your desk, put it so that, you know, when you see that, then you just, you know, invoke the Lord's presence. So have a little picture of God on your car, have it in your house, on your desk. So the more reminders you have, and then anytime you see anything beautiful, you see the sun, you know, I always chant the Gayatri mantra, because that will do next week, the invocation to Lord Sun. So that's why Hanumanji, there's a story about Hanumanji where they said, how do you remember Ram? And he opened his heart. It is said he actually opened his heart and the sound of Ram, 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 Ram was coming. That is symbolic, that in a devotee's mind, the name of God. So the more you chant, the better it is. And soon it becomes a habit. Yeah, But it's before you go to sleep. No, in deep sleep you can't. But before you go to sleep, you can do that. Or that's why they say before you die. But if truly if you have been chanting, they say even in deep sleep, the subtle body is still there, and that could be chanting. You know, the chanting could be going on. It's like a tape recorder. See, if you have the last thing you put record, when you turn on the tape recorder, it plays that. Why? Because it is stored in there. Like the last thing I recorded was that, and I stopped. And then when I turn on the tape recorder, it will play that. So similarly, the last thing I have remembered is God's name. When I wake up, that will be there. And in the deep sleep, I am with God. See, that's why they say deep sleep is, that's why even in the daytime, if you ever have an opportunity to take a short nap, or if you have had a good night's sleep, you wake up refreshed because you are with God. Yeah, so that's why the deep sleep is state with God. But the idea is, at least in my waking state, let me do it. Rest, let him worry about it. Yes.
And even chanting quietly or in your mind is as effective?
Yes. In fact, they say mental chanting is more effective. But then see, the verbal chanting is easier.
Sure.
Because, you know, I'm doing it and I'm hearing it. But in the mind only, I'm hearing it. So it's more difficult. But if it is done with full attention, so chanting should not be done mechanically. You shouldn't just get up and say Om Namah Shivaya and then get out of bed. No, I'm chanting God's name. So whenever we chant Om, even here or anywhere, it is God's name. So it has to be, that's why they say it's a sacred mantra. So it should be done with full attention. Yes, but the silent chanting is the best. In the Upadesha, Raman Maharishi says, Uttamastavad Uchamanda Chaktaha Chitta Jam Japa Dhyanam Uttamam. He says loud chanting is good, soft chanting is better than loud, and silent chanting is the best, because silent chanting is meditation, or it is close to meditation. So when you chant in the mind silently and then pay attention to the silence and then again chant, then that is, you are almost in meditation. So yes, silent chanting is better than loud chanting, as long as it is done with attention, not mechanically. That's very important. Yes.
But when they do in silence, we don't have that vibration seeping through our ears, but the effect is the effect happening really somewhere inside,
yes,
physical, like some sort of vibration, even if it's an orthosis, even if it's
right, it's an internal vibration. Mm-hmm. And if, when it is done with full attention, because silence is the fourth state, waking, dream, deep sleep, and silence. So silent chanting is very close to that silence. So the chanting should begin loud and then soft and then ultimately silent with full attention. And then ultimately the silent chanting should merge into silence, because the sound is a disturbance. Even though it is vibrating on the ears, it is a disturbance on that silence. So the goal of meditation is to reach silence, not the sound. Sound is a disturbance. Sound is the manifest. You want to go to the unmanifest. So the idea is it should be silence. So silent chanting is, because any noise, like even now I'm talking about Om, that is a disturbance. I'm not able to express that Om. The true meaning of Om can only be understood in silence. Cannot be, no matter how many hours we speak, you cannot describe the true meaning of Om. True meaning of Om can only be taught in silence. That's why in Dakshinamurti, there's another beautiful text, where the student goes to the teacher, and the teacher only does this. Students, four are very advanced students. And the student teacher does this, and the student understands, and all his doubts are resolved. Doesn't speak a word. The teacher only shows them the symbol. So what does this symbol, why do we use this symbol? So they say the three fingers represent the three bodies, the gross body, the subtle body, and the causal body. So the gross body, the subtle body, and the causal body. So these are the three bodies. Now the finger represents ego, like when I say you there, you know. So that means I am separate from you, or you. So that's why they say it's root to point, because then it shows the ego that I'm separating myself from you. So the finger is the ego. Now the ego is always caught with the gross body, the subtle body, and the causal body. But when the ego separates from the three, and the thumb represents God, represents Brahman. Why? Because the thumb is most important. Suppose my thumb is cut off, my hand is useless. I may have four fingers, but I cannot write, I cannot hold a fork, I cannot hold a spoon, I cannot do anything, I cannot even drive, I can't hold anything. So the thumb is most important for the hand to function. Suppose one finger is cut off or this finger is cut off. As long as the thumb is there, the hand can function. So the thumb represents God or Brahman. So this ego, which is pointing at others, when it is separated from the gross, subtle, and causal bodies and becomes one with God, merges with God, that perfect circle is the final state. So the individual separating from the gross, subtle, and causal body, the perceiver, feeler, and thinker, becoming one with God is the silent message. So that's why silence is the best way to teach. So that's why this particular symbol is called the Jnana Mudra, or the knowledge posture. Jnana Mudra. So knowledge, because the ego becomes one with God. And I'm separate from the world which I see and becoming one. That's why in meditation, a lot of people use this. They put their hand on the knees and use this symbol. So that is silence. That is teaching in silence.
So what is the causal body? When you say gross body, is this one?
Gross body, subtle body is the mind and intellect. The causal body is the vasanas, which caused me to act. Why did I take birth? Because of vasanas, because I had these unfulfilled desires. That's why they say, man is born out of sin. When Bible says, what sin means? Ignorance. Not knowing my true nature, that I am divinity, that's why I took birth. So because we had vasanas, and which were unfulfilled desires, and took me away from God. That's why they say, that Adam and Eve went away from God. Because they had these desires, and the vasanas is what causes me to be born. So that is the ignorance. So vasana is the causal body, which is the cause of my birth and also the cause of all my actions. Like a person who has an alcoholic vasana, his desire arises in the mind and then he goes and buys a drink. Or a person loves to play sports, that's a vasana. Then the desire arises in the mind, and then he goes out and buys a football or a baseball to play. Or a person who has a spiritual vasana, the desire comes in the intellect and mind, and then he goes to the church or temple, or she goes to study. So vasanas are called the causal body, which cause me to act, which are the cause of my birth, which is ignorance. Okay, today we'll meditate on Om. To the breath, I find that very good. So start with that. Put your fingers above your forehead and breathe in through the left nostril, deep in and out. Deep breath in, pause, and breathe out. Three times. Now close the left nostril and breathe in and out through the right. Pause between inspiration, expiration, and breathe out and pause again. Pause as long as it is comfortable. Just 1 or 2 seconds. Now in through the left and out through the right with a pause. Now in through the right and out through the left, and keep alternating. Now bring your hands down and do the same thing, in through the left, out through the right, in through the right, out through the left. Without your hands, just do it with your breath. Now breathe normally and relax the body from head to toe and from toes back to the head. Pay attention to each part and relax. We chant Om 3 times audibly. Pay attention to the silence between the Oms. Om. We are chanting God's name. Now 3 times whisper. Oh. Oh. Thank you. Now chant Om in the mind. Same way, long and slow, pay attention to the silence. And slowly lengthen the gap, the silence. And ultimately, let the chanting end in silence. And in silence, turn your attention inward to God's presence within you.